This is an interview with George Apostolou. It's being conducted on the 15th of November 2012, and the interview is taking place at George's home. The interviewer is Joanna Tsalikis, and the interview is being conducted as part of the Greek Migrant Experience Oral Histories Project, an OECA initiative, funded by the Australian Government's Your Community Heritage Programme, sharing community heritage stories. Also present is Mrs. Helen Haltas, facilitating the recording equipment. Welcome, George. Thank you very much for agreeing to be interviewed.
Thank you for asking me.
By us today. May we start by asking you to state your full name?
My full name is George Apostolos Apostolou, but I have dropped the Apostolos, the middle name, off, so I'll go by the name of George Apostolou. I was born in Egypt on the 9th of the 9th, 1944. I was one of triplets, the other two were the Mistocles and Harry, and also I have an eldest brother, Peter Paraskeva, who is 4 years, almost to the day, older than I. Born in Alexandria, Egypt, just towards the end of the war.
Yeah. Now, with the, you said you were one of triplets, there was another little boy.
There was Themistocles, yes. Themistocles was was the first one of the bunch that came out. And then it was Harry, and finally it was me. It was 20 minutes apart between the three of us, between the first and the third. And Themistocles had my eldest brother, Paraskeva, caught whooping cough while he was at kindergarten. And, of course, being an infectious disease, we all finish up getting it. Worst of all was Themistocles. The medication was very much limited those days because most of it was going to the front lines of the war. So, unfortunately, at the age of 10 months old, he had passed away. It was, it took a bit of time to sort out whether it was Themistocles that passed away or I passed away, because we were very much identical. To the extent that even Mum couldn't tell us apart. They had to put name tags on us too.
So to tell you were us apart. Identical.
Yeah,
twins.
with
same features.
With the Themistocles, but not with Harry. he was different completely.
Yeah. I suppose those sad things would happen.
It is. It was sad.
The lack of the medical.
Yeah, but I guess the fortunate part of us. Being triplets, it helped to get Dad out of the army because he became a father of four, and no father of four was to go into the front line. So he served his, no father of four was to be enlisted, actually. And after our birth, he served his last 3 or 4 months at the embassy in Alexandria, just as a guide.
There. So the number of children actually determined his war service.
Ending, yes,
very
correct, yes.
Situation.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit now about your childhood in Alexandria?
Childhood in Alexandria. I grew up in a very much Greek environment. Alexandria being a very, very multicultural, multinational city at that time. Each community virtually had their own schooling. Hardly anybody, any European, will speak the local language. It was up to the locals actually to learn the European languages in order to communicate and go about the businesses. I attended the Greek primary school at Alexandria, Tosichea Scholis, as it was called, and I completed that. I went as far as year six, and before we migrated to Australia in 1957. So at the age of 13 or 12, it was when we had migrated to Australia.
Multilingual aspect of the culture is quite a fascinating part.
It was very fascinating overall, part of the entire system, because bear in mind that Egypt at some stage was under the British rule, so most of the laws were British. All the exchange and financial were based on the French. Heavy industry was either German or Italian. The Greeks were very much merchants in shipping and in cotton and food stuff and that. And
So these were also to do with understanding the languages of commerce and business, I suppose.
It was nothing really for us to change from one language to the other, depending on where we were and what dealings that were taking place at the time. Transactions, some from were in French, because the majority of people were French, and or was in Greek, depending on what industry you were dealing with.
Alexandrian Greeks speak French, or was it a language?
Most of the Greeks from Alexandria would speak anything up to seven or eight languages.
That's extraordinary.
And it wasn't only just for the Greeks. The same thing happened with the Italians and the Germans and the Maltese. They would speak as many languages as what the Greeks would. Mm. It was very much international sort of.
Very cosmopolitan, and a very rich culture in its diversity.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if you can give us a bit of an insight into the foundation of the Greeks being in Alexandria. For example, what was your parents?
Greeks have been in Alexandria, and they had many dealings ever since the times of Alexander the Great. But going back in the about the 1700, I think it was, or 17 or late 1600s, Greeks had settled very densely in Alexandria, and through that they created their own community. There was something tune of about, I don't know, probably about 20 churches, about seven primary schools, three or four colleges, and it was a high school, both for male and females. There were orphanages for males and females. There were what they call syssitia, which were feeding areas for the poor, irrespective of whether you were Greek or not. The community was providing daily
humanitarian aid
in a sense, yes.
So it was an advanced society in that sense.
We were not really a poor family. We were not a rich family. We were just middle ground family.
Mm.
And Dad was born in Asia Minor. Apostolis, his name was. He was born in Asia Minor in 1922, after the wars in Asia Minor. He found himself with his mother and his brother aboard a boat that was heading to Alexandria in 1922, at the age of 11, he landed there. He did his schooling over there. He did his trade, which was a motor mechanic with the tool makers. Tool making was also part of the motor mechanic trade qualifications then. And as a young man, he travelled all around Africa, doing all sorts of jobs that he could find. And finally, in 1936 or 37, he had returned to Alexandria, where his mother was and his brother, and that's where he met my mother. She came to Alexandria via her auntie. She was sort of semi-adopted by the auntie at the age of 8, and she left Cyprus, Athenum, at the age of 14, and went to Alexandria to live with their auntie. And through my mother-in-law, because she knew the auntie, they got to know each other. And 1938, they married. In 1940, they had the first child, my eldest brother. And in 1944, so hoping for a girl and finish up with a further three boys.
The boys were all...
Yeah. Yes, as I said, we were middle-class sort of family with, the typical Greek family and values and traditions.
Did these traditions, being part of the diaspora, were there variations in those traditions as opposed to the mainland Greeks? What's your view on
well,
that?
Well, I don't know. First time I've been to mainland Greece was 10 years ago. In 2002. So I didn't have much to compare, although we have family, cousins and uncles over there. We never really ventured to go there, although we did go to Cyprus at the age of 8, and I met my mum's parents and that. We stayed there for a period of 3 months holiday, and I revisited there in 2005. And strangely enough, the same time in 2005, I went back to Egypt after 50 years away from the place. And I was amazed, and so was my daughter, to be able to trace the steps. Although a lot has changed. When we left Egypt, Alexandria was just on 1 million people. Nowadays it's 9.5 million. So, you know, it's, but the main core of the place still the same. Planning still continues, which Alexandria's plan actually is based on the Alexander's cape.
Interesting.
Mm.
So not like Light's Colonel Light's view of Adelaide.
No.
I'm wondering if you can give us an insight now as to when things started to change under Nasser. What was the political atmosphere?
Things started to change in 1952, and that was the time when they exiled King Farouk, and Naguib took over. He was an army person. He took over, but he maintained very much very friendly with the European communities and so forth, because he was aware that his people were not ready to govern themselves in to a certain extent. Whereas he was, of course, 2 years later, he was tumbled by Nasser. And Nasser's view was that Egypt should be for its people, and it's true. And you got to admit, you know, some of the Egyptians, in a sense, were really foreigners within their own country in some areas, because of the European situation. You know, as I said, I went to a Greek school, a primary school. There was Greek churches, there were Greek clubs, there were scouts groups, everything. You know, and it wasn't just of the Greek community. Every community was exactly the same. The Italians had their own schools and churches and high schools. The British were the same. So
people lived harmoniously.
They lived
in other
very
words.
Much in harmony. Yes, it was very much in harmony. And the only people really that Nasser wanted to get out of the country was the British, the French, and the Jews, but we all developed, or not we, we were very young to think of any fear, but I think the elders feared that what was coming would be that for them to be forced to become Egyptian citizens, which in that case meant that they would not be allowed to leave the country or move as freely around the country as what they,
and that would have been
they were.
Entailed a loss of identity as well.
And not so much loss of identity, it was the enforcement of, if it was going to be a enforcement of citizenship, which meant that you had to be naturalized Egyptian. Then, of course, there was very few Egyptians would travel unless there was for schooling purposes or education
So this naturalisation would have applied
It would have applied across the board.
Even if people had been there for generations.
It wouldn't make any difference. Mm. Bear in mind that most of us Europeans were there on a residency basis, and your residency was renewed every 5 or 10 years. So
right.
If they didn't want to renew your residency, that meant that, they would force you to become a citizen. So a lot of people left just before the residencies became due. And they went all over the place. Greeks generally left Egypt were very lucky because of the knowledge of the being multilingual. So they found good positions overseas in Europe or Greece and South Africa, Canada, US, they went everywhere. And of course, some of them, a good majority of them, came to Australia as well. The reason we came to Australia was because Dad's brother, Uncle George, he came to Australia in 1946. So we had someone to come to, I guess.
Did it hold any appeal for your father at all? Did he know much about
Australia? No, he didn't know me. We didn't know much about Australia, really. Mm. I don't know. Nothing. The feeling is the same with most Europeans at the time. I don't think anybody knew very much of Australia there. Mm. They knew there was a place called Australia somewhere down south, down under.
With kangaroos.
As we call it. But, I don't think many people knew. But there was... It was a land of opportunity, and Dad thought that by bringing us here, we will have the opportunity to for education and become.
So when did your father make the decision to come? Did you come as a family?
We came in as a family, including my grandmother, who lived with us. That's my father's mum. She always lived with us as far as back as I can remember. So she was with us. So all the five of us, or six of us, came across. We flew over. In fact, it took a five-day journey to get to Darwin from Cairo.
5 days.
5 days. Oh, well, there were no jets in those days. Everything was turbos. Propeller planes, and we sort of hop from one place to the other in some areas for refueling mainly, and the longest journey was from Darwin to Sydney, and that took 13 hours.
Happens.
By four engine plane to. Mm.
So, yeah. Where were you stationed in Australia? Adelaide.
We landed in Darwin first step into Australia. And from there we to Sydney. Then we caught a train to Melbourne, where Uncle George was waiting for us at the station, and we Melbourne was our destination, and we stayed. I dropped a couple of years because of language problems. I dropped a couple of years of primary school and went back to fifth grade and good old Yarra Park
primary. Was that difficult for you at the time?
Well, yes and no, because at, I had started learning a bit of English at school. See, in Egypt, you start learning languages in school from fourth grade onwards. And I did French, and English is not that much really different than French in some of the pronunciations and meanings of words, and I could speak a little bit of Italian and read a bit of Italian, so it helped. But it was difficult because the pronunciation again, you know, you got a different dialogue of the English that we learned was more of the English, British English than the Australian English, and so there was a bit of a problem in the pronunciations of that, but we managed. From there, I went to, from primary school, we went to technical school, and I took those you had an option at technical schools to do a dual course, one for trades, and combining with trades you can do additional subjects to go into commerce.
And the additional, very sensible.
I did the additional, but it was handy because you learned the trade, and I tell you what, it has helped me a lot, both in life. I can do variety of stuff on my own, carpentry and plumbing and sheet metal work, and that I can do, read mechanical drawings and engineering drawings, and so that has helped me greatly in the various positions I held in my employment. And
you mastered a lot of skills.
You did.
Now, when was the move to Adelaide made?
Oh, the move to Adelaide was in 1969. We always were within community, involved with the community in some form or the other. We were both young athletes, so I joined the when I came to Melbourne, there was a Greeks of Egypt Association, which I joined them, and I became members of that, and we started playing basketball and table tennis and volleyball and that, and became part of the group there, and then with schooling, again basketball and football, both soccer and Australian rules, and so I was very much of an athlete. I did a lot of athletics as well, sprint events, and in
sport
1958, there were the games called Panhellenic Games, mm-hmm. which something in the tune of anything between 600 to 800 Greek youth will gather and meet at a different capital cities, and whether it be in Adelaide, Melbourne or Sydney, and they were coming. They'll come from all over the Australia, and we'll meet and compete each other. And one of those games, I was competing against my brother-in-laws, which I knew very well, and through them I met their sister, which finished up marrying.
And and what was her name?
Maria. Yeah, Maria. She also too was an athlete, and we met in those Panhellenic Games in Adelaide in 1958, 59, something like that.
And what was there a particular sport that you excelled in and that she excelled in?
Maria excelled in sprint events, both in 100 metres and 200 metres. I too did that, and but I also played volleyball and basketball, and basketball I played up to the age of 38. So it was competitive basketball, top level basketball, but it's near the national teams. It used to be the state teams, and I played within the state team league. So, yeah. So,
Okay, so you settled and married in Maria in Adelaide.
I married Maria, yeah. We corresponded for 2 years and proposed to her, and we married in Adelaide and moved to Melbourne because that was mm-hmm. the home base. And we stayed in Melbourne for 3 years, and that period of time we were looking at building our own place. At that stage we were staying with Mum and Dad. They had a huge house, 5 bedrooms or something or other, so there was no problem of us, and it helped us greatly in our finances, in savings for a deposit to put a deposit for a house. But when we started comparing prices in building, Adelaide was more than a third cheaper to build in Adelaide house than to build in Melbourne. So in one of our holidays to Adelaide, we decided to buy a block of land up at Windy Point, and within 2 months, Maria changed her mind. It was too dangerous for her. She was afraid of snakes and bushland out there. And she was thinking how she was going to park the car coming down the hill or going up the hill. So we moved from one hill to the other hill. We moved from Windy Point Hill to the Bedford Park
So that hill. Determined where you would live, because she was...
It determined where we would live, yeah. Mm. And on that, thanks to my brother-in-law, George, who was an engineer. He drew up the plans for us, and so it cost us nothing for the plans, and he did the supervising of the building. And, so we finished up in Adelaide. In fact, this household here, we built it in 1973. From 69 to 73, we were renting various places around Adelaide. And... 1973, we built this house, and been here ever since.
So I might add, we're at 9 Milton Street.
9 Milton Street, Bedford Park.
Bedford Park. Let's look at your professional life now, George. You obviously had a lot of skills and a very good education. What did you end up doing in Adelaide work-wise, and very active in the community?
After the high school or technical college commerce that I finished, I enrolled into the Swinburne Technical College, which is now Swinburne University in Victoria, and that was the place where most of the accounting courses were being held, and I commenced my accountancy course over there, and on a part-time basis. And when we moved to Adelaide, I continued with Adelaide University and completed my course there, and I've got a position with an accounting firm, Mickey and Pickering, in Carey Street. And within a short period of time that I was there, I think it might have been moved in early 69, but by August 69, one of the senior partners, Lancake, his name was, he called me into his office, and I said, hello. I thought I did something wrong. And but he advised me that he had an acquaintance who work in the international firm of ACI, Australian Consolidated Industries, and they were about to set up a new company, and they were looking for a young accountant, and he had recommended me to that. And
how old were you at the time?
I was 69. I was 25, just 24.
So it's quite a young age to take 24. On a large position of responsibility. So.
Yeah, I think I was going in for everything, really. I was involved in shares, I was involved in finances.
Ambitious young man.
And did a lot of auditing when I was in the... So I had plenty of experience in the accounting field and I joined ACI in 1970, and I was one of the youngest executives actually of the company, at the time, and I stayed with them for 18 years. And in fact, I probably would have still be with them. It was marvellous. It was a company that really assisted the personnel to advance, and they had internal courses, both in management and safety, and which was, you know, things that took place 15 years later in across other industries. And of course, it was the only company that at the time that had computers. In fact, they were doing all the Canberra government stuff at the time.
So it was quite a progressive company.
It was very progressive, and very, and they were very helpful to the employees.
I just want to go back a little bit now, because when you arrived in Australia, you were how old? 13?
I was 12.
12. It must have been a bit of a culture shock, but being such a young person, you obviously adjusted very well to the cultural changes. And I'm wondering how your the rest of your family adjusted to that.
Well, it was for us kids was for the younger Harry and I, where that's with the triplet and I. It was much easier because we had cousins about the same age, and and it was easy for us to move on. We mix well with the cousins and the friends, Australian friends and so forth. My eldest brother, Paraskeva, he did a signalman's course with the in Egypt through the British naval forces. So he got the rank of second lieutenant in that category, and so he was looking for a job here to go into the armed forces. Unfortunately, my grandmother didn't want him to be there, to go there. She had a final say, and he never went there because at that time there was quite a bit of friction around the world, and she feared that coming, you know, survived two wars and semi-exodus from Egypt, she sort of a bit fearful. And so he went ahead and did an apprenticeship as an electrical engineer. And
how did your mother adjust?
My mother, I think Dad was okay because he can speak the language. And although he was employed at General Motors on a night shift and as a tool maker, and it was something that he was familiar with and enjoyed it. But Mum was the problem, because Mum never moved away from home. She was a housekeeper type thing, and she never worked in her life. And of course, when we moved out to Australia, there was the necessity for her to go out and work, and she did go out and work. But she found it very difficult and challenging in adjusting, although she didn't stay work for too long, but a couple of years, I think. And then my grandma passed away, so she had to stay home and look after the men trips that she had.
George, we know it's been a career of great achievement. I don't want to embarrass you anyway, but you've, in our preliminary interview, you mentioned a lot of different things that you gave to the community. Now, you were instrumental in terms of helping to establish the Greek-Egyptian community in South Australia. Can you talk a little bit to
that? I wasn't instrumental in that. That was established in 1951 by a group of friends sitting around a coffee lounge. Then they decided instead of meeting at a coffee lounge, that should meet at a permanent venue. So in 1951, they formed the Greeks of Egypt Middle East Society of South Australia Incorporated, and they had a standard house. Of Mr. Perdikis' house was the George Perdikis was the first president, and he also held all the meetings over there. Slowly, They've carried out a variety of functions, most of them fundraisers, in order to for them to obtain their own premises, which they did in 1956. Mm. They bought the place on Richmond Road.
And that's GEMS, what we call GEMS.
Is now Richmond Road, used to be called West Beach Road then. And they bought a house which had a very large garage at the back. And that garage became the assembly hall for them. And in 1958, they knocked that down and they extended it to the boundaries, from one boundary to the other. And there have been renovations ever since. Every committee that's gone there has added their view to it as well. Quite a nice place, and very central this days. Actually, there's three other associations that are housed within the premises. It's the Agricultural Month of South Australia is housed there. The Glendy Festival is housed there, and also Noogas, the Students' Union.
Now, you were president for a few years there, as well.
Yeah, I was a president there for about 20 years, I was president for 14 years, but I've been a member of the association since 1970. So,
Can I ask, in that 14-year period, you probably would have seen a lot of changes in the community, and I'm just wondering, what are some of the highlights or some of the significant things that you recall or perhaps were involved in? Can you talk a little bit about that to us?
We managed to have a group of a youth group of anything up to about 80 members. Unfortunately, the way this youth group was set up was that they would have their own bank account, and the main committee will have their own bank account, and that created a bit of a friction between members, and the youth group were having functions which were very successful. Of course, the parents were pushing the kids to succeed, but unfortunately the older members were being disadvantaged in a sense. Although any monies that the youth group managed to accumulate, they had spent within the premises, but a lot of people didn't see it that way, but they competed in the local athletics, tennis, table tennis, volleyball, basketball. They had groups of people and teams to compete in the local competitions here in Adelaide. For a long period of time, they have numerous trophies of their efforts and successes, So when I came in, I tried to get the group together, and we did for a little while. But again, you know, committees change and things change as they
It's
go.
Very difficult, isn't it, to sustain young people in that kind of organisation?
It is mainly because. My mind, I'll come back to that in a minute, but the problem is the people that had set up the various Greek associations in South Australia, they served the needs of their immediate needs, what they needed at the time, and then didn't really look much into the future. Now, of course, the elders are disappearing. A lot of the associations finding problems maintaining membership, and the youth, unfortunately, you still have those older people they're not giving the youth the reins to govern, and youth being very active and very forward, they say their views, and a lot of the older members don't agree with it. Of course, the older members still outnumber the youth, and slowly they disappear. And they disappear from, say, about the age of 15 to about the age of 20, 25, 28. And once they remarry and settle, they sort of drift back to the associations. But you know, that's been the trend.
It's a bit of a circular.
It is. And but you know, it'll take. You know, people say to me, "Well, how did you people manage in Alexandria to be what you are and be as Greek as much Greek as you are?" Well, you need to remember that in Alexandria, the Greek community was there for over 200 years, and we're talking of Australia communities generally that migrated to Australia. You know, 50, 60 years. So there's still a long way to go for those communities to come to that level that yes. where Alexandria was. But you know, my dream is that one day we will have a Greek centre in South Australia that will accommodate all Greeks and specifically the youth. We have a lot to give to the community, to the greater community, but unfortunately, you know, until there are splinter groups within the greater Greek community in South Australia, and until yes. those groups find the census to see where the need is, we're not going to achieve very much.
Mm.
The other thing, of course, is a lot of the associations or all the assets that they have accumulated, what's going to happen to them when the elders go? Where is it going to go?
Mm. That's an important question.
It is. Mm. I mean, okay, there's Home for the Age, and there's the Greek Centre, the University of Flinders, but that's not going to be enough.
Mm.
I think we need to find ways and means where we'll go back and say to the future generations, whether they're Greek, Italians, Australians, Vietnamese, Chinese or whatever, this is what the Greek community has been able to give to the South Australian greater community. And unfortunately, I don't see that happening at the moment.
So it's certainly a very important question you raised, George, and I think it's good that you've raised it as part of your talk, because something you feel strongly about.
Pushing it out there. There's a handful of us that think along the same lines, and
absolutely.
And we're pushing it. But you know, there's still hurdles to overcome.
Mm. It's been really interesting listening to your story, George. I guess what I would like to...
I didn't tell you about my daughter.
No, I was going to say, I was going to ask about your offspring. You've got one daughter.
I only have a daughter. She's actually number three. We were unfortunate to have a couple of miscarriages in the process of getting to Michelle. But we got there. Mm. And Michelle is the apple of my eye. As they say, she's a brilliant young lady. She's just finished her business master's last Friday, and she's still celebrating. And she tells me that's the end of her schooling, but I'll believe it when March comes along and she hasn't enrolled into something. That's, of course, her fourth degree, I think. So she's by profession, she's a radiographer. She works at Flinders. She's one of the senior radiographers down there. And,
So she's obviously been inspired by her dad.
In a sense, I think it might have, but she's taken both from my side and her mother's side of her athletics ambitions. In 2000, 3 months after the passing of Maria, their mother.
Now, Maria passed away quite young.
Yes,
she?
She passed away at the age of 56. She got nominated to represent Oceania in the World Games. So, sorrows or no sorrows, I packed up my bags and followed my daughter to Madrid and watched her compete in the triple jump event. She came ninth or tenth on that, but she has continued. She has been South Australian champion for triple jump for a number of years now, also a long jump. She also does a couple of sprint events, 100 metres and a couple of metres. But nationally, she only concentrates on the one event. And recently, she took up cycling, so she can compete at the Tour Down Under next.
So she's inherited January. Your sporting prowess as well, Mother.
She's a very independent young lady, and I guess the fault is mine in a sense, because having the one child, you always tend to remind them of the fact, you know, anything that we did as a family, she was part of the conversation and part with participating in all decisions, and that's now just very much an independent person.
George, are there any other significant things that you would like to mention as we finish up? I'm sure there are a lot of things in your life. I know that you're a JP as well.
Yes, I am a Justice of the Peace. I have been for a number of years. As I said, I love assisting people. I love helping people within community, whether it be any nationality, it doesn't really matter. But I did help out in the establishment of the Greek Childcare Centre at Haymarsh, and also at the Home for the Age. I was a director there. I've also been a director of a credit union back in 1979, where there was a tight squeeze of labour and everything, and we, ICR, had to change the thinking of employments and so forth. They retrenched quite a number of people. In fact, from about 1,200 or 1,300, the numbers had dropped down to 800. And of course, a lot of those people that were retrenched had commitments. And in order to help them out, we formulated the Cowboy Credit Union, which those that were part in company, we had given them 1% higher interest than what the bank were paying. So we managed to deposit the money with the credit union, and those that needed loans to pay some of the commitments, we lend them to them at 1% interest, cheaper than what the banks would or other lending institutions. So, I was there for 15 years as a director in that, until I finished my services with the ACI and resigned from that position. But it's I like helping out.
And you've also been involved with the Greek Culture Month, or the
Greek Culture Month. I've been involved with that since its beginning, since origination, its foundation. I'm a foundation member to that, together with a couple of others who are still in the committee. And that's been going now from strength to strength.
Absolutely.
For the last 21 years, and always thank the South Australian government and the Greek government for their assistance, initial assistance and ongoing assistance with the various grants and fundings that they provide for us. And they're not big, but we managed to put up very decent performances. I think we have cracked through to the mainstream of arts in South Australia, and we are very much recognised as the top act, if you want to put it that way, among the cultural Greek activities in the state. We present quality programs, and it has paid off. A lot of work, but it pays off.
That's wonderful. Thank you very much for your time
today,
George.
Thank you for giving me the chance.
Is there anything you want to add before we finish, and that we might not have asked you about today? What would you like to finish with?
I don't really know what to. I don't think there's much more that I to say after all I did say.
Okay.
Again, thanks very much.
It's been a very rich experience listening to you talk, George, so that's wonderful.
Sure. And I must say that I have been lucky through my employment and through the contracts and community that I have, that I have met a great number of people that I have drawn their knowledge and experience And I hope that what I have learned from this people, I have put into practice and help others accordingly.
Wonderful. Thank you very much, George.
No problem.